Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Our guest this evening is Grace Choi. She's the founder of a startup, Cookable. She's also on the cooking channel, Cooking with Grace. And in just a moment, Grace will be back and tell us all about her startup and her very interesting life. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. You can find us on Facebook and always email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Clark is here in the studio. Thanks so much, Clark, for your contribution as always. And our guest this evening is Grace Choi. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being on Heartstock.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm very excited.
Yes, I can hardly wait for everyone to hear your story. Please tell our listeners just a little intro for yourself and what you are up to.
Sure. My name is Grace Choi, as Carol said, and I am the founder and CEO of a company called Cookable, Inc., and we are a voice and video-assisted interactive recipe instruction platform. So what we're doing is creating this recipe delivery experience built on top of home assistants like the Echo Show and the Google Home Hub that basically guide you through a recipe from start to finish and implementing this emotional and integrated affective learning experience so that all the obstacles that you have when you're cooking, you know, whether it's trying not to get grease stains on your cookbook or reaching a point in your recipe where you're like, well, I don't know how to chop an onion. How do I do that? We remove all those obstacles by providing this anticipatory experience for you so that you can have all the videos that you need available to you, all the definitions. And all of these recipes are narrated with real voices, real chefs, like real personalities, such that we're really resurrecting the oral traditions of cooking using these new technologies and emulating the social experience of learning how to cook.
There's something fundamentally beautiful about cooking, and I like to call the experience that you're describing, not just cooking, but sharing that meal, as one of the languages of love.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you can delve more deeply into that. I mean, my reference is purely experiential, and I'm sure that you're very educated. You have a PhD in, what do we call it, cookology?
Oh, no, food studies. Food studies.
Mm-hmm. There we go. I'm sure you can articulate this much, much better than I. But before we delve into that, can you share with our listeners a little bit about your personal story and how your feet got set on this path?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's one of those things where, you know, you're following various different disparate feeling paths, and it all sort of converges into one pivotal moment where you were like, you reach that point in your life where you're like, oh, that's why I was doing this. And that's why I was studying abroad in Spain. And that's why I met this person. And that's why I had this conversation. It was really, it all sort of came together like a bolt of lightning for Cookable. And I will start by saying that, you know, being a child of immigrant parents was hugely important for this journey. I mean, my parents, you know, they were very educated. They came to this country with very little money, whatever money that they were allowed. And I just remember being like from a very young age as a child, looking around at our house and our possessions. And, you know, we weren't wealthy, but we were so comfortable and cozy in our home and thinking like, oh, this is amazing that my parents did this from scratch. And I felt like I inherited, you know, two really important things. Like one, a sense of deep possibility as a child of immigrants. And I think that this is something that not everybody has access to. But, you know, my parents immigrated to this country because they believed in the opportunities that were available to us. And I grew up with this idea that anything was possible. And that's not necessarily something that only came from my parents, but it came from my textbooks, like my U.S. civics courses. You know, this country is built on immigrants and immigration. And we're really lucky to have that sort of mentality where we can do whatever it is that we set our eyes on doing. And the other thing is a sense of responsibility. And this is also tethered to, you know, being a child of immigrants. I think that my parents and I and my brother, we were all learning how to be American at the same time. Mm-hmm. And when you are a child of immigrant parents, you're teaching them about what homecoming is, what, you know, eating cultures look like and those kinds of things. And I remember from a very early age, just thinking, oh my God, like my kids are going to be so lucky. They're never going to have to worry about this. But as I got older, I realized that those fundamental aspects of my upbringing were the things that I love the most about myself. So then it turns into, well, how do we, you know, as a parent, how do I instill that kind of deep sense of responsibility to my child? So yeah, I do think that with the responsibility comes the responsibility of making something of your life, because your parents went to all of this hardship and endured 1,000 difficulties and humiliations to get to where they are. You want to do something that validates what it was that they did. So having that sense of deep purpose was a huge driving factor for, you know, how I ended up where I am.
And how about your experience with food growing up? I would imagine that very early on, you came to realize that food is one of the languages of love.
Yeah, I love that question. It's funny because, you know, I went to college and I was an econ major, and it really, you know, wasn't until my senior year of college where I was talking to my boyfriend at the time, and I was like, you know, I just want to scrap everything and just go to culinary school. And he was like, you should if that makes you happy. And then that idea started really percolating in my mind. And then all of a sudden, everything from the past, like the previous 22 years sort of fell into place and it made sense. Like, I remember all the books, you know, Oliver Twist, like the Babysitter's Club books, like all the various books that I remember reading. I don't remember so much of the plots or the characters, but I remember what everybody ate. And I remember like all of my, you know, milestones, all of my childhood memories revolved around, centered on food. You know, I remember the first time I learned how to cross the monkey bars by myself. My dad took me to McDonald's to get a hot fudge sundae. So when you start looking back on your life, like, you know, retrospectively, contentedly, like you see how like these important moments really lay the groundwork for what it is that you would become and what would become important to you.
Yeah, that's really interesting point, because I relate in the same way, only it's kind of like what I was wearing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, whatever what you were garb I had on at the time. It's
right.
Funny.
That's so funny.
So how does this all kind of come together and overlay what you've created with Cookable and how it guides what you're making in the way of a startup?
Yeah, great question. I mean, Cookable is absolutely 100% a reflection of who I am and what I am. I mean, not only does it converge all of my areas of interest from, you know, this intensive PhD work in food and psychology and recipe development that I did for the Food Network and Cooking Channel, but it also, you know, incorporates all the peripheral sort of interests that I had as a voiceover, you know, talent and as a researcher in the acquisition of cultural practices and you know, even just my own interest in podcasts and storytelling and the power of narrative. I absolutely think of myself in the work that I do as driven by stories and driven by, you know, the human experience. But Cookable on another level is very much a marriage of high tech and high touch. It's very emotional. It's very social. It's grounded in the idea that we are connected to other people through food. And I'm very emotional. I'm very social. The way I communicate my love for people is through cooking for them and talking about food and asking them, like, did you eat? What did you eat? You know, were you, I mean, it's funny because when I first started dating my husband, he's Caucasian American, sort of a mix of all things. And I remember he would get a little weirded out in our early courtship, because every night we'd be talking on the phone, I'd say, tell me about your meals. What did you have for breakfast? What did you have for lunch? What did you have for dinner? Like, what, you know, like, were you tired after the sandwich? And he was like, why are you asking me these questions? And I was like, well, it really helps me understand your day. And so in that sense, you know, Cookable absolutely is, you know, a reflection of who I am. Like, in, unlike a lot of other companies, like what I guess our competitors who are just trying to offer this like sort of GPS guide for recipes that's decontextualized and non-emotional, we're really grounding this idea, this company, in the belief that emotional learning is the most effective learning. If you're cooking with somebody, if you're cooking with your grandfather and he's, you know, teaching you a dish that's sort of inherent to him, and then all of a sudden these little micro stories come out about him, you know, growing up during wartime and what he had to do to make ends meet and those kinds of things, like little memories about what his mother bought on the black market. Those kinds of things provide, not only, you know, enhance the experience of cooking with him, but you'll never forget that. You know, the next time you're making that dish that your grandfather taught you how to make, you will never forget what he told you. And those memories are just written onto your body. And that's a really powerful thing that I think is often overlooked when it comes to food and cooking.
Yes, I agree with that. And that leads me to my next question related to tech. And I know we don't want to give away the goods, but can you share with our listeners how tech has been used in Cookable? And what is it that ultimately you're trying to achieve by introducing tech into your startup or knitting it together?
Mm-hmm. So we're building right now. So it's a little too early for me to talk about what exactly our technology looks like. But I can say that with voice assistants and home assistants, the technology is constantly evolving. The interactive capabilities that we want to have with Cookable don't necessarily exist yet, but we're hoping to be the pioneers that help, you know, facilitate its existence. But the ways in which we structure, like, the technology that we're using is artificial intelligence, human-computer interaction, natural language processing, you know, the sort of like the main sort of buzzwords, the big things that are out there right now with regards to natural conversation and understanding social cues and that kind of stuff, so that we can feel like a companionable site for home cooks. But ultimately, I think that what we're trying to do is tailor the technology to what we know about education. And one of the most important things about education is that, and one of the things that we're challenging is that we believe that human beings are not passive recipients of knowledge. You cannot just tell somebody to do something and they'll do it. If that were human nature, then there would be no divorce. Like, there wouldn't be problems. Like, human beings are complicated, they're complex, and they require different motivations. They require different types of language. And they require different styles of learning and education. So what we are centered on is what's called legitimate peripheral participation. It's called situated learning. And it stems from the work that I've done and the research that I've done in anthropology and in the acquisition of cultural practices. And it really comes down to learning as a participatory experience where people are involved from day one in talking about what they're doing and learning about what they're doing and having the scaffolded experience that doesn't just throw them into the most difficult challenge, but walks them through it, anticipates what their needs are. And so I think what the long-term vision for us is to really transform the ways in which people, individuals perceive of education and how learning takes place. And home assistants, The home assistant technology is so new and it's so interesting. I call it the Wild West, because there's so much that has yet to be developed and we're sort of making up the rules as we go along. But the potential for it to be a learning instrument is huge. We can apply what we learn and what we build in our technology for Cookable towards, you know, learning how to play a musical instrument or painting or, you know, doing home repair. All of these things that are hands-on commercial enterprises that are really involved are really important. One of my friends, Ken Albala, he's a food historian. He said something that's really impactful and it's really shaped, you know, how we think about Cookable, is that cookbooks are really attempts to put actions into words that then have to be put back into actions. And so much of learning is that. It's very clinical. It's, you know, you have to write things down and digest it. And home assistants take away that necessity. They take away that step. People are really visual learners. They're auditory learners, and we can appeal to them in really interesting, innovative, and unforeseen ways through this technology.
So this is our time to take a quick music break, and we will be right back with Grace Choi of Cookable. This is Heartstock, and I'm Carol Murphy. Our guest this evening is Grace Choi. Hi again, Grace.
Hi.
So when you were just sharing that kind of challenge that you were solving, I was thinking about many of my friends really stress out when they cook and how much they would appreciate what you're doing. And I think that's true in a lot of cases when we're learning something new, is we tend to, there's a period of stress before we start feeling comfortable. And
right.
That kind of leads to my next question, which is about becoming a parent. How has that affected your interaction with the food world?
My interaction with the food world, I think that in terms of less so with the food world, I mean, my child's, I had these grand aspirations for, you know, her to be, to have a very diverse palate and to be eating, you know, all these really interesting foods and, you know, broccoli Rob. She's 2 years old and she likes crackers, you know, she likes pasta, she likes chicken, you know, it's of course, you know, this is my child, but, but in terms of entrepreneurship, I think it plays a bigger role in terms of being a parent for the first time. I mean, she was 4 months old when I was thinking about Cookable for the first time. And like I said before, it was like a lightning bolt that hit me. And prior to becoming a parent, you know, I was doing these, I had a job that wasn't necessarily the most satisfying thing. I had these, you know, these professional paths that I had taken and nothing really seemed to fit, nothing really knit together. But then when I had Casper, it was, you know, all of a sudden it all came together at once. And it was like oxygen for me too, because becoming a parent is really wonderful, but it's also very stressful and you don't really understand, you know, how your identity has changed. And it just felt like a tether to, you know, this former life that I had. It felt like a connection to this really important part of my identity that existed before my daughter was born. And there are a lot of people who really hate working on startups. They hate entrepreneurship and they think it's a slog. And I understand why. I really, really do. But I think that experiences are relative. And I think because I'm a parent and because the stakes are so high and because there's so much I want to prove, not only to myself, but to my daughter and with regards to my legacy, it's just been such a joyful experience. And it's really forced me to maximize every single minute that I have in which I can think about Cookable. I mean, I'm very hands-on with Casper. I'm very devoted and she's in school a couple of hours a day, but it's like the amount of work that I'm able to get done in 2 to 4 hours is significantly greater than anything that I was able to accomplish within an 8 to 9 hour period prior to when she was born.
This was a theme of one of our previous programs. So it's interesting that you're, you know, experientially proving this out. And from a standpoint of social responsibility, because it sounded like from the very beginning you were very motivated by what you saw your parents go through to get you to where you are.
Yeah.
How is it having the shoe on the other foot now as a parent?
Oh my, it's so exciting. It's so exciting. I'm as excited about the opportunity to, you know, to incite social change as I am about the product itself. And this is on a multitude of levels. I mean, not only, you know, about the product, because Cookable, what I love about Cookable is that there's nothing morally ambiguous about what we're doing. There's nothing, we're not trying to replace any industries. We're trying to complement and enhance them. We're not trying to replace cookbooks or magazines or anything like that, or meal kit delivery services. We're trying to enhance them. And in addition to that, our mission is to help people cook better and more. We're removing all of these unnecessary obstacles that so many cooks have. You know, meal planning is taxing, you know, figuring out how to get your groceries, like doing inventory of your, you know, cabinet, like cooking, you know, all of these things in the conventional sense, the way that we understand them to be are flawed and antiquated. And we can really make an impactful change with regards to how people experience joy in the kitchen. And when people cook more, they're healthier and they are more cognizant of where their food comes from. And as they grow more cognizant of where their food comes from, they experiment more. They experiment with other cuisines. And the ways in which people can really, you know, grow that sense of compassion and empathy is through experiencing and eating and cooking another culture's cuisine. So the idea that, you know, we can say to somebody who has never made pad thai before, hey, you've mastered the skills that you need to make something like pad thai. Is this something you're interested in? And to have them, you know, dip their toes into that and to hear these like little narratives around, you know, this dish from, you know, a particular Thai individual, like that's a really powerful thing, what we're doing from both a physical and mental health standpoint. And then with regards to the actual company that I'm really excited about, I'm so inspired by Patagonia as an organization, as a company that really is employee driven and the benefits that they have, for example, on-site subsidized childcare. So important. When I think about the future of Cookable, I think about us having a campus that has on-site childcare that's subsidized so that people can bring their children into work, can bring their children into meetings, have their children bused in from, you know, their elementary schools into work. I see, you know, having a big community garden that is available not only to the Cookable staff, but also to the community itself, like the outside community, where we can have classes for, you know, children, families, adults, whoever, to learn about agriculture and to understand where food comes from. So when I think about Cookable as a reflection of who I am, it's not just the product, it's the company itself.
It's interesting that when I was reading through your biography, when I first met you, I didn't realize that you were so highly educated and that you were a college professor. Has that changed how you cook and teach others to cook?
I wouldn't say that it's changed the way I teach others to cook, but I will say that it changed my understanding of, I'm sorry to keep going back to entrepreneurship, but it really did change my understanding of entrepreneurship and also just what cooking meant for people. Food studies is an interdisciplinary field of study that looks at the relationship between food and the human experience. So rather than going into an anthropology or a political science program and focusing on food and the way people eat, you're going into food studies and you're looking at the history of food. You're looking at the, you know, the psychology, like I did, the anthropology, the however many fields of study, sociology is hugely important. And for me, as a startup founder, which is something that I never expected to do, it really taught me about work. And I always said, you know, when I was in the PhD program, that I was the village idiot of the program, because I honestly was. I mean, I was okay before I went to, you know, to NYU. And then I got to NYU and I just realized how dumb I was compared to so many other people. And I would just be sitting there listening to them talk. And I couldn't even, there was this quote that I often like to say, recite by Mark Twain. It was, better to have people think that, better to be quiet and have people think that you're a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. and that's, I, honest to God, hand to God, that's how I felt the first 3 years. And so for me, overcoming that fear and participating, learning how to participate in a conversation and learning how to contribute my own thoughts and ideas was really, it was really, really difficult. And it really taught me, getting over that anxiety taught me that that nothing was beyond my reach. You know, I could be the dumbest person in the room and still be okay. And that's how, you know, that's what life is. Like as an entrepreneur, like that's, you know, you go into a room and you're like, oh, I had no idea any of this existed, but having the confidence to say, okay, this does not reflect poorly on, you know, my self-esteem. It's fine. I learn it and I go, I move on. That's how I really do think that that's the most important lesson that the degree played. In addition to how I think about Cookable and the important research and information it gave me with regards to understanding how people cook and the history of cooking.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it was quite surprising when I got to the point where I was able to go and travel a bit. The very first thing I found myself wanting to do is sample all of the food. And it's remarkable how I've always fallen in love with wherever I've gone because of the food. It's just, it's a lot of fun, but it reaches very deeply to the center of the human experience, I think.
It does. And you know what? You bring up a good point. It's not just joyful, though. I mean, it is joyful. It's wonderful. And, you know, you think back on these memories, these food memories that you have, and they're awesome. But, you know, like you were saying about your friends and the difficulties that they have when they're cooking, food and cooking can be really complex, complicated, weighty, loaded things. You know, I teach food and psychology, and we talk a lot about, you know, disordered eating. We talk a lot about, you know, the problems in this country with regards to health and wellness and, you know, changing our diets and stuff like that. There are people who would rather die than change the way they eat. And that really does speak to the inextricable nature of food and psychology.
Yeah, we've run out of time, sad to say. This is Heartstock, and we've been speaking with Grace Choi. Thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we will see you next week. This is Carol Murphy. Thank you for listening to Heartstock Radio. Bye-bye. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.